Hi, it's Charlie Puth. As a writer and producer, I need to get my ideas down. With Bic's 4-Color Pen, I can. It's a really big part of my creative process. I'd love to share that process with you at an event on October 22nd in New York City. Visit BicForColorVIP.com to learn how you could win a trip to the event. And remember, the more Bic products you buy, the greater your chances to win.
Bic is a proud supporter of education.
Know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home.
Welcome to your radio home. It's Michael Patrick Shields, all across the state of Michigan and worldwide at MIBigShow.com. Joe Biden scolded Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, when they were talking about a potential hostage deal, according to a report by the Jerusalem Post. The president told the prime minister, quote, "Stop BSing me." But he didn't use the letters. He used the full-on term, "Stop BSing me," to Netanyahu. So city is closer to a hostage deal, and for whatever reason, the president didn't believe it. It's Michael Patrick Shields with you. Travelers waiting in long lines at Beirut Airport yesterday in Lebanon on Sunday because, they're told to get out of there. And they told them, don't worry about where the flight's going. Get on any flight to get anywhere out of Lebanon. There have been lots of canceled flights. As you know, our broadcasts, which were meant to take place from Jerusalem at the end of August, canceled because the airlines have canceled their flights into Tel Aviv. So there are people now evacuating, essentially, the Hezbollah-controlled Lebanon. It's a very, very complicated. Fears of a Middle East war, in fact, grew this weekend. And there is some talk now as the United States moves warships and fighter jets into the region that Iran-aligned Axis of Resistance is getting ready to respond. Groups from Lebanon, Yemen, Iraq, Syria, drawn into this war of Gaza and Israel, Hamas and Israel, I suppose is the way to say it, and there are several Iranian officials vowing that they will avenge the death of the Hamas leader, which took place inside Iran's sovereign borders. And in fact, there are some people who are saying it will happen today. That today is the day that revenge will be severe and appropriate at the time, place, and manner of the choosing of Iran, blaming the terrorist Zionist regime for the death of Hamas's leader. On our AT&T line, Dr. Majid Sarghapour is an Iran affairs expert, political director of the Organization of Iranian American Communities in Washington, D.C., with 40 chapters across the United States. Not sure if there's one in Michigan. It wouldn't surprise me if so. Welcome to the airwaves.
Thank you for having me. Yes, there is.
Okay. Is it in Dearborn?
Oh, I think Ann Arbor and that area is the center. A lot of our community leaders live there and have activism from there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are you hearing the same thing, reading the same things we're reading, that Iran will somehow get revenge against Israel?
Well, that is what the news says. The regime in Iran decades ago made a strategic decision that since it is illegitimate, it does not have the ability to democratically rule, and so therefore to compel the international community into silence, or to blackmail the international community into silence, if you may. And so that you can oppress the people of Iran and remain in power in perpetuity, needed a number of factors. One of which was to create a distractionary framework outside of Iran to stoke violence and disaster in the region, to occupy the international community. And that's where you see these terrorist organizations established across the region. And so, and then the next question is, why is it Iran doing that now? Why is it you see an increase in the level of terrorism and activity across the Middle East, in all of those countries you mentioned, supposed axis of resistance? Well, it's because the regime in Iran is reeling significantly inside Iran, as the tensions between the people of Iran and the regime increase as the vulnerability of the regime and fear of its downfall increases, the level of violence outside of Iran likewise goes up. And that is what we unfortunately are witnessing in the region. The weakness of the regime inside Iran to be able to attend to its people, to heed the demands for democratic changes that the Iranian people demand. And because of that, it needs to kill. And that's why you see a likewise increase in the number of executions and persecution inside Iran during the same period that we are talking about. Since October 7, 2023, nearly 800 people in Iran have been executed. Those are just published numbers. The real number is significantly higher. And that it speaks to that just rise in executions and oppression after the Mahsa Amini uprising in Iran, and certainly also increased violence outside of Iran, in Gaza and across the region.
The Hamas leader who was taken out, presumably by Israel, although they haven't taken credit, if that's the right word for it, was attending the installation of Iran's new president, who, based on what I think you're telling me, is merely a puppet?
Very, very, very much so. He's aligned with the Supreme Leader. Supreme Leader, as you know, is the ultimate authority in Iran's regime. And because the regime is, is epicenter of fundamentalist Islam in the global arena for a reason. It is a medieval dictatorship ruled by a singular person called the Supreme Leader. And Ali Khamenei is the Supreme Leader. And so in order to distract the West, they have brought different versions of presidents to power, from moderate to supposed moderate to conservative, depending on what the time demands. But what they all have in common is that they all have killed Iranian people in perpetuity. They all have advanced terrorism abroad. And nearly all of them, since the late 1980s, have advanced Iran's ballistic missiles and nuclear weapons technology. What the free world is missing in this calculus is that the people of Iran are not fooled by this. That's why there was only a 9% participation in this last election. The people of Iran no longer want this regime. They want regime change, but not the kind that occurred in Iraq or Afghanistan. The people of Iran are capable of uprooting the regime on their own. They have an organized resistance led by the National Council of Resistance of Iran that is capable of accomplishing this. But let me say this, if I may. I'm a healthcare practitioner. One of our first duties in healthcare is to do no harm. And one of the first duties, one of the first tasks I think it rises here for the West to do is to do no harm. But what it has been doing for the past four decades has been doing harm to that demand for democratic change in Iran, to that struggle for democratic change in Iran. The way it's been harming is that, in fact, it's been engaging and entertaining the Ayatollahs as if they're able to change their behavior. Whereas the people of Iran, dying at this rate that I just mentioned, highest per capita execution rate in the world, 74% of all global executions occurred in Iran in 2023. 74%. It has a country that only has 1% of the global population, but 74% of all executions occurred in that country. Those people are fighting and dying because they want that regime to go, but whereas the American administrations, one after another, want this regime to change its behavior. Instead, what we are saying, our community is working with members of Congress. House Resolution 1148 in this session of Congress is demanding is that the people of Iran be supported politically and morally, not with weapons or money, that the Iranian resistance have an organized resistance. Iranian people have an organized resistance.
We'll continue. Dr. Majid Sagjapur, Iran affairs expert, political director of the Iranian American Communities in D.C. Stay right there. We'll continue. Thank you.
It's all about soul.
In my lifetime, and just about before my lifetime too, Iran was this curious tinderbox, like part European, part Middle East. I don't even know how to describe it, and I don't know what the end game is too. I'm really curious about that. I don't know if I'll see it in my lifetime. I know Dr. Majid Shahdapur would like some sort of resolution. He escaped Iran himself after the revolution in 79, and unfortunately, his brother was not so lucky. He was executed by the Iranian regime. So now, Dr. Shahdapur is an Iran affairs expert, the political director of the Organization of Iranian American Communities in Washington, D.C., and on our AT&T line. They've got 40 chapters across the United States. I happen to be around a lot of Persians in Beverly Hills, California. Here, there's a place called Persian Square right near UCLA. And so this is often a topic of discussion, but one that is very puzzling to those of us who don't understand what kind of endgame Iran could possibly want and how much puppeteering they're doing of the countries around them. For instance, do the people of Iran feel like hostages themselves? Do the people of Gaza feel like hostages? Do the people of Lebanon feel hostage to Hezbollah? Maybe you could give us some perspective.
Excellent question. I think you termed them really well. The people of Iran feel like prisoners. The people of Iran have, in fact, been prisoners. Before the break, I mentioned the number of executions in Iran. And certainly, the people of Iran have been fighting to get out of this prison. And Iran's end game, the regime's end game, is survival and expansion if it can. That is its end game. And the reason for ballistic missiles, the reason for developing nuclear weapons, has nothing to do with energy. It has to do with survival, to make sure it can maintain its control over the West, so it can conduct foreign policy and kill Iranian people with force. And that is really its goal. It has no interest in the Palestinian cause. It has no interest in liberty for anyone in the region or rights of anybody in the region. If it did so, it would first ensure the liberty and democratic principles for its own people. And that is why the international community is chasing the wrong goose here by trying to destroy this organization, that organization outside of Iran, engaging Iran so it can maintain some sort of a relationship with the regime, is actually the very wrong thing to do. It should actually emulate its policies according to how members of Congress have advised. I mentioned House Resolution 1148 earlier. Is that, in fact, it should engage the people of Iran through engaging their organized resistance. The people of Iran are capable of making that change, and the conflict is not necessary outside of Iran. That conflict is already occurring inside Iran, and what we are saying is the free world should engage the people of Iran who are wanting to make that change rather than engaging the regime to try to change its behavior.
The signals, I think maybe you're suggesting, from the United States have been quite varied depending on who's in the White House.
Without a doubt. And I think, but the key factor among all who have thus far held policy towards Iran over the past four decades is that they all have, regardless of whether Republican or Democrats, have wanted to either pressure the regime or engage the regime to change its behavior. What we are saying is that the people of Iran want to change the regime itself. So the demand of Congress and demand of our community is the ask of the Iranian people that their democratic aspirations for regime change be supported. That means that the international community should wash its hands of trying to diplomatically change this regime's activities or just go after its tentacles outside of Iran. It should focus its attention at the head of the snake inside Iran. Inside is Iran is where the Iranian resistance is active and is engaging this regime directly. What we have to do, first of all, is close Iranian embassies down. We need to hold the regime accountable in international criminal court. We should pressure the regime and cut off its finances. We should engage the Iranian opposition led by the National Council of Resistance of Iran to see what they've got to say on what the next policy is. That is what we are not doing. But instead, we are spending significant amount of money and human resources and human lives trying to address the symptoms of the regime rather than actually addressing the disease itself, which is sitting in Tehran.
If the United States and, let's say, a coalition were to invade Iran, would we end up with another Iraq, or would that coalition be welcomed as heroes?
I would say that would be Iraq on steroids. Iran's history, Iran's topography does not allow an invasion from outside. That is why a foreign engaged war with the regime, it is a non-starter. And neither is perpetual engagement with the regime. The idea of either of these two is because the free world has thus far thought there is no other alternative. What we are saying is there is an alternative. The Iranian people have an organized resistance. I just named them. It's led by a Muslim woman. Her name is Maryam Rajavi. Our goal, our entire resistance goal, is to overthrow this regime. But in front of us is not only a regime, but also the international community that constantly engages it, either exchanges hostages with it, gives it money, hosts them. I mean, I was just watching a news story of a Belgian representative in Iran in saying goodbye and eating excellent food, dining and wining with the Iranian officials just yesterday. And so as long as that continues, they're suffocating the Iranian people. This sort of diplomacy suffocating their drive to change this regime. And so I think we can change this calculus. The sooner we make the ill-fated decision, but we have to make that decision.
Thank you very much for the schooling that you're giving us, and we'll keep in close touch with you. With a chapter in Michigan, it's the Iranian American Communities Organization based in Washington, D.C. with MPS.
After countless steps and more than a few miles, your dog drives you forward one last time to make that final climb. And as the rising sun peeks out from the horizon, you know, incredible happens here, because it starts here. With the fuel that makes it all possible, Pro Plan Sport. Discover advanced nutrition made to fuel strength and stamina in active dogs like yours at ProPlansport.com.
You have to celebrate your wins. We've won the Mint 400, and I celebrated that win for weeks. But then we had to focus and move on.
Dustin Jones, championship-winning Can-Am off-road racer.
Can-Am's the same. The most race wins in all types of terrain with the Maverick X3, but then they focus and move on. The Maverick R, 240 horsepower and the first 7-speed dual-clutch transmission. This thing's a game-changer. We celebrate those wins, but never for too long.
The Can-Am, Maverick X3, and Maverick R. Visit CanAmOffroad.com.